Okay, we're beginning here with the Mishnah on the bottom of Chaf Amud Bet. The Mishnah begins, Min ha-modi'im vilifnim ne'manim al kli cheres. That from modi'im and inward, they are believed with regards to kli cheres. Min ha-modi'in l'chutz, from modi'in and outwards, ein ne'manim, they are not believed. Here we're talking about amei aretz, who are selling utensils, earthenware utensils. They're believed when they're inside of modi'in. They're not believed when they're outside of modi'in. Modi'in is a city or location outside of Yerushalayim. The Gemara in Pesachim says it was 15 mil outside of Yerushalayim. So that radius around Yerushalayim is considered to be basically within a day's journey of Yerushalayim. And any Amaretz that's found within that radius is believed with regards to the utensils or earthenware utensils that he sells that they are Tehorim. Outside of that area, he is not believed. So now the Mishnah tells us, Ketzad, what is the case here? Hakadar, that's the one who is either selling or made these earthenware utensils. Shumocherak derot, and he's selling his earthenware utensils. Nichnas lifnim in Modi'in, if he comes within the radius of Modi'in, within those 15 mil, who? Hakadar, he the seller, vehenak derot, and the utensils he's selling, vehena lukuchim, and the buyers, ne'eman, they are believed. Yatza, eno ne'eman, as soon as he exits, he's not believed. Over here, Rashi says that each one of these items gives us a chidush. If you look in Rashi, hu akadar, the person who brings them in. Avalim masran liyad kadar amaretz, ayoshev modi'im olifnim loiminu. So even though he came from outside of modi'in and he brought them into the area of the modi'in, if he gives them to someone who's already there or works inside of the modi'in area, he's not believed. You have to buy it directly from the individual who brought them in beyond the modi'in within that perimeter of Yerushalayim, but if he gives them over to someone else, he no longer has that ne'manut. Also, v'heinak k'deirot. These k'deirot that he sells, he's believed, but if somebody else gave him k'deirot to sell from inside of the Modi'in area, they are not believed. He's only believed on his k'deirot. He's not believed on other k'deirot. And again, v'heinak l'kuchim, Rashi says, chavirim shra'u sheviyan ne'man. The chavirim that saw him bring it in, they are believed. Hakadar itzlan, v'lo itzal l'kuchim acherim. But other buyers or do not have that ability to buy from him. They have to know that he came in from the outside and brought them into that area inside of the Modi'in area. So Rashi says each one of these items comes to exclude a situation in which either the person selling is now granted that right to someone else, or he is selling someone else's wares along with his wares, or when buyers are coming, only buyers that saw him come in are allowed to buy from him. That's the way Rashi learns it. Some of the other Rishonim look at it in a much more simpler sense, which is that this same individual who outside the area was not believed with all of his possessions and all of his wares, as soon as he moves in, he is believed. If he moves back out again, he's not believed. So it's simply, even though it's the same one, he's believed on the inside, not on the outside, not all the diukim that Rashi makes out of the Mishnah. And obviously, Yatza, he leaves that area, Einu Ne'eman, he's no longer believed. Tana, Modi'im, Pamim Kilifnim, Pamim Kilachutz. Modi'in itself is sometimes considered to be inside, and sometimes it's considered to be outside. Ketzad, what's the scenario? Kadar yotze, if the person who's selling the wares is leaving, meaning he is traveling now from inside the area to the outside, v'chaver nichnas, and the chaver is now entering the area, he's going towards Yerushalayim, so then kilifnim. Then Modi'in has a sense of being inside, because if the chaver does not buy from this individual now, he won't have a chance. This guy is heading out. He's not going to turn around and move back in to sell to him on the inside. So we say, if we don't let him buy now inside of Modi'im, the seller is going to go beyond him, and he's going to head in, and he'll never have a chance to buy it. Whereas, shnehem nichnasim, if they're both entering the area, or shnehem yotzim, if they're both going out, then Modi'im has kilochutz. If they're both heading inward, then he'll just wait, and he'll buy from him when he's inside of the Modi'im, meaning past the city of Modi'im. But he won't buy from him in Modi'im itself. If they're both heading out, then there's no difference. Meaning if the Chaver is heading out, and so is the Amaretz, then why should we grant the dispensation to buy a Betara? The whole point of buying the Betara is for heading into Yerushalayim, which we'll see later on. So in a case where there would be a loss if we didn't let him buy it inside of Modi'im itself, then Modi'im has a din like being inside the radius, and he could buy it there Betara. That's a case where the seller is exiting and the buyer is entering. On the other hand, in the cases where both the buyer and seller are entering, or the buyer and seller are leaving, in those instances, we do not let him buy it in Modi'im itself, either because he has a chance to buy it further in, and then they'll be inside the city, or because he has a chance to buy it outside, And there's no reason to give him a dispensation to say that the Amar Etzel does a bitara because they're both heading out of this area. Amar Abaye, Afanan Nami Tanina. Our Mishnah is also Meduyeket that Modi'in has two different statuses. Hakadar Shimachartek Dirot V'Ichnas Lifnim. The seller who is coming inward, and he goes before Lifnim in Amodim. He is beyond Modi'im, meaning that he is within the area that is beyond Modi'im. He's closer than Modi'im to Yerushalayim. Time of the Lifnim in Amodim. It's only because he's beyond Modi'im towards Yerushalayim that he's believed. Hamodim Gufa Lo Me'emin. But in the city of Modi'im itself, he's not believed. Ema Seifa, what are you going to do with the letter after the Mishnah? Yatsa Enu Ne'eman. When he leaves the area that's within the perimeter, the radius of Yerushalayim inside, then he is not Ne'eman. Hamodim Gufa Ne'eman. It's only when he leaves Modi'im that he's not believed, but Modi'im itself he would believe. So what? How do we reconcile in the Mishnah this stira that sometimes Modi'im seems to be b'chutz, sometimes it seems to be b'fnim? Shmaminah, kan b'kadar yotzei v'chaver nichnas. The explanation of the case where Modi'im is supposedly like the inner perimeter, that's the case, or the latter half of the Mishnah that's meduyak, that Modi'im is b'fnim, that's the case where the seller is leaving and the chaver is entering. Kan, the first part of the Mishnah was meduyak, the Modi'im is like the outside perimeter and is not considered to be tahor there. That's v'shneim yotzim, v'shneim nichnasim, shmaminah. So our Mishnah is also meduyeket that Modi'im has different statuses depending on the scenario. Tana, ne'emanim b'kli cheres hadakim l'kodesh. This is a modification, a qualification of our Mishnah, and that is that the only earthenware utensils that he's believed about are the kli cheres hadakim, the thinner or the lighter forms of earthenware utensils, cups, plates, bowls. These are smaller utensils. That's what he's believed about for Kodesh. Amar Reish Lakish, v'hu, shinitalin b'yado achat. That definition of what's considered to be a kli cheres hadak is when it's taken in one hand. If you can carry it in one hand, then it's kli cheres hadak. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, afilu shinitalin b'yado achat. Even if you can't carry it in one hand and two hands, it has to do with the utility of the utensil, nothing to do with the size of the utensil. Amar Reish Lakish, loshanu elari kanin. It's only if he's selling empty earthenware utensils of a mlein, lo. If they're full, they're not, because this Amaretz is not believed about what is inside of the utensils. Inside the utensils, whatever food or drink is inside of them, they are tmeim. Since the food and drink are tmeim, then certainly the kli cheres are problematic. So Reish Lakish said it's only if he's selling empty items that that is the case. But if he's selling items that are full, then we would not say that. That's Reish Lakish's opinion. On the other hand, Rabbi Yochanan Amar afilu mleim. Even if they're full, valafilu apikorsoto letocho. And even if he has a liquid inside of it, his own liquids that are inside of it, then it's not problematic. So even though the liquids are clearly tmeim, and nevertheless, even though it's inside here, the Chachamim said that the klei cheres is okay, the items, the food that's inside is not okay. V'amar Rava, mode Rabbi Yochanan b'mashkim atzman she'in tmeim. Rabbi Yochanan agrees that she's not neman on the liquids that are inside, it's just the klei cheres itself that he is neman on. So you have an interesting dynamic here, which is the items contained inside of the kli cheres are tmeim, but the kli cheres itself is considered to be tahor, which is almost an impossibility. How can you classify the inside being tamei and the outside being tahor? V'al titama, don't think that's so strange, because back on Chav Bet, we already saw this concept with regards to the Shita Beit Shammai. Because Beit Shammai over there is said in a Olam Meit, the items that are inside of a kli cheres, certain items are tahor, and certain items are tamei. And over there, Rabbi Yoshua, when he challenged the position of Beit Shammai, quoted the continuation of those Mishnayot and Olot and said, Sherei lagim malei mashkim, you have these utensils that are full of liquids, lagim tmeim, the utensils themselves are considered to be tamei, tumat shiva, like as if they were touched with tumat ameit, and they have tumat shiva, mashkim tahorim, and mashkim atahor. Now Beit Shammai explains over there the reasoning behind their shita, which is that by the liquids, by the drink, by the food, the only person that's going to eat that is the Amaretz. And so the Amaretz is not going to listen to us anyway, so we just say tahor by that. On the other hand, the utensils, which the chaver will borrow or utilize, over there we say they are tmeim, because there it has relevance to the chaver. So we bifurcate the din, even though it's illogical. Even though they're in the same utensil and protected by the same utensil inside the Olam Meit, so they either should both be tahorim or both be tmeim. Nevertheless, we bifurcate the din because of the circumstances. So too over here. We bifurcate the din. So even though the mashkim inside are tameim, the kli cheres on the outside will be tahor. Now obviously, if the item is tamei for certain, then the item or the kli cheres on the outside, or in the case of the ohel hameit, the food items inside will clearly be tamei. Our only question here is that's a safek. The liquids of the amaretz were safek if they're tameim. So we assume the liquids are Tamei, and we assume the Kli Cheres is Tahor in the case of Rabbi Yochanan over here. And by the case of Beit Shammai, we don't know if the Kli that holds them is Tamei. If the Kli that holds them is Tamei, it doesn't protect what's inside. So with regards to the food items that are inside, we say they're Tahorim. With regards to utensils inside, we assume that the outer Kli was Tamei. Again, it's all because there's a Safeg here. Therefore, we make a determination based on that Safeg about the status of the items that are found inside. So Rava says, don't think this is so crazy, because we find other instances where the Chachamim bifurcated the din, even though it seems illogical, and the same will be true in our case over here. Now the next Mishnah begins. Hagabaim shenichnasu l'toch habayit, the tax collectors, Jewish tax collectors that entered into the house, v'chein ganavim shechziru et hakelim, also ganavim that stole items and then brought them back, nanemin lomar lo naganu, they are believed to say that we didn't touch certain items, that the Gabayin are coming to collect the tax. They're trying to take collateral against the tax payments. So whatever they took out, they're neman to say, we took this item and we didn't take anything else from there. And therefore, only the item that they took is Tamei. The rest of the items inside are not Tamei. The Ganavim that stole, if they bring back the item, clearly the item that they took probably should be Tamei because they touched it for sure. But they're neman to be believed that they didn't touch anything else in the house when they went to steal. And therefore, only the item that they bring back is Tamei. But the remaining items are not Tameim. Both of these people are believed in this case to tell us what is Tameim and what is not Tameim. Now Rashi says with regards to the Mishnah and the Gabayin, this only refers to Kodesh. And this is a continuation of the header from the Mishnayot we saw before, that this is Chomer Be'Truma. These are places where Kodesh is Kal and Truma is Chamur. And therefore all these things where they're Ne'aman, it's only with regards to Kodesh, not with regards to Truma. On the other hand, Tosafot and some of the other Rishonim believe that it's Be'Kodesh and Truma, that its impact here is for Kodesh and Truma. If he's believed on Kodesh, then he's certainly believed by Truma. And these Mishnayot are not a continuation of that header of Chomer B'Truma. Ubi Yerushalayim ne'amanim ala Kodesh. In Yerushalayim, the Amei Aretz are believed on the Kodesh. Now, Pashtut HaMishnah, this is the same din that we saw before, which is that, with regards to Kodesh, all Amei Aretz are believed in Yehuda. The same is true inside of Yerushalayim. Ubi Shat HaRegel, but during the Regel, afal Truma. Beyond that, in Yerushalayim, they're believed on Truma during the Regel. So before in Yehuda, we saw that they were believed on Kodesh all year round. They were believed with regards to Truma, Bishata Gitot, and Bishata Badim. Now, we say there's an additional case whereby Truma they're believed, which is during the Regel, they are believed on Truma inside of Yerushalayim. But with regards to Kodesh, they're believed both in Yehuda and in Yerushalayim all year round. The Gemara will say, wait a minute, is there a Chiddush to the fact that there's Kodesh in Yerushalayim? And the Gemara will reread the Mishnah, not to that Pashtut. After we finish the Gemara, we'll go back and summarize all the dinim that we see out of this. So now, V'reminu, is that really true? Hagabayim shenichnasu l'toch habayit. We have a Mishnah in Tarot that says the tax collectors that come into the house, kulo tamei, the entire house is tamei. We assume that they touched everything in the house, and everything is tamei. So when it says lokasha, that's not a problem. Hadika nachri be'adayu, hadalecha nachri be'adayu. Depends if they have a non-Jewish overseer that's with them. We'll learn the Gemara now according to Rashi. We'll come back and see the Rabbeinu Chananel learns the Gemara completely differently. But right now we'll follow the Shita of Rashi, which is that when the Nachri is with them, then they're afraid not to go in and take everything and look at everything because he's supervising them. And because he's supervising them, they do a much more thorough job. And then we assume they touched everything. But when the Nachri is not there, they do a more superficial job. And since they do a more superficial job, we can believe that they just took whatever they needed and they didn't touch anything else. So that will reconcile between the Mishnah and Tarot and our Mishnah over here. Our Mishnah over here is talking about a case when there's no overseer, and that's why we assume they only touched the keli that they took. On the other hand, the Mishnah in Tarot that says everything is Tamei, that's when they have an overseer there, Titznan. Because that Mishnah continues in Tarot and says, Imyesh Nachri Mehen, if there's a non-Jewish overseer, Nanamim Lomar Lo Nichnasnu, they're believed to say that we didn't go in, Aval Ein Nemanim Lomar Nichnasnu Lo Naganu. They're not believed to say that we went in and we didn't touch. So this is similar to something we saw earlier in the Gemara with regards to the Amei Aretz with being Matbil Kli B'Toch Kli. So over there, then Amei Aretz is believed to say that I never was Tovel a Kli inside of another Kli. But if the Amei Aretz comes along and says to us, yes, I was Tovel a Kli B'Toch Kli, but the opening on the outer Kli was wide enough that the water could get in, there he's not believed. Basically, he's believed with regards to the general statement or the gross statement about the Halacha. Did you do it inside another Kli? He's believed, whether he did or didn't do that. The intricacies of the Halacha, there he's not believed. So over here, with regards to the general statement, did we go in or we did not go in, that they're believed with. With regards to, well, we went in and we didn't touch, those intricacies, they're not believed about. Binary statements they can make, and we believe them, which is, we did or we didn't go in. The same thing by, did I ever put a kli b'tol kli or not put a kli b'tol kli? Once they have to modify or qualify their statement, they're no longer believed. So that's true by the Amar, it's there. It's also true here by the Gabaim. They're believed to say we went in or we didn't go in. But once they've gone in, they're no longer believed as to what they did touch or did not touch inside. Mar says, v'chi ika nachri ba'dayu mai habi. What's the difference whether there is an overseer there, there's a nachri there? So Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Elazar, chanamar imat nachri alehem. The fear of the overseer is there. That what causes them to act in a much more thorough manner, because he's there and they're afraid of the overseer. Chanamar imat malchut alehem. That it's a government problem, meaning that the nachri represents the government. And when the government's there, a representative of the government's there, they have a fear of the government. And that fear of the government causes them to be much more thorough. My binayu, what's the nafkamina between Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar? Remember, Rabbi Elazar is a Talmud of Rabbi Yochanan, Talmud Chaver. Here they're offering different reasons that seem very similar. Is there any nafkamina halacha between them? Depends, if the overseer is not an important individual, he himself does not instill fear in the people that are checking. It's only because he's a representative of the government that they have that fear. So if the issue is being a representative of the government, then that issue is still extant because he's a representative of the government. They are fearing, and that means they touched everything. On the other hand, if it's a situation in which we're afraid of the Nachri himself, over here he's not such an important guy, so they're not going to be so afraid of him, and therefore it has a status as if the Nachri is not there, and that'll be the nafkamina between the two positions or statements made by Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar as to why the Nachri makes a difference over here. V'cheina ganavim shechziru et ha-kelim. Our mission says the ganavim, they returned the kelim. Virimini, is that really true? A ganavim shenichnasu l'toch ha-bayit. Ganavim that went into the house. Einu tamei elo makom drisat raglei ha-ganavim. The only place that is tamei is the place that they walked. Now, as Rashi says over here, oh, the place that they walked, mikom makom drisato mi'o tamei. For sure, the place that they walked is tamei. V'koshekin kelim sheganvu v'yakziru. Also, the kelim that they brought back, certainly those are also considered to be tameim. So Amar Pinchas Mishmei probably should be Derova Rabba, Kisha Asu Tshuva. It's a case where they did Tshuva. Dekanami, you can be Midayik that out of our Mishnah, Nektani Shek Zero Tekelim. They gave back the Kelim, Shema Minah, therefore they are believed. So according to Rashi, the difference is whether they did Tshuva or not. In a case where they did Tshuva, then they're believed. Since they're already doing Tshuva, they're not going to lie. So anything they tell us, we believe. Whether it's the Kelim that they took out that are Tamei because they touched it, didn't touch it, or they tell us they didn't touch anything else. Everything they say, we rely on what they say because they're doing tshuva over here. In the case of the Mishnah that we just quoted, that Mishnah from Tarot that we just quoted, there we don't say that they're doing tshuva, and therefore anywhere they walked is considered to be tamei, and anything they touched is considered to be tamei. They have no nemanut anymore because they're not doing tshuva, and therefore we can assume that anything they touched or anything that they walked on is considered to be tamei. That's the way that Rashi learns the Gemara. So Rashi says that the presence of the Nachri in our Gemara is actually problematic, because his presence causes us to have less nemanut in the Gabayim, because we see that they're going to be much more thorough in the case that the Nachri is present. And with regards to the Ganavim, when they are doing tshuva, we believe them. When they're not doing tshuva, we do not believe them. The Rabbeinu Chananel, on the other hand, learns the Gemara almost in the opposite direction. And this is what Rabbeinu Chananel says. Hada tanina, that's what we say, agamim shenichnasu l'tocha bayit kulo tamei. When it's kulo tamei, ukmina kedaleka nachri badayu. That's a case when the nachri is not there with them. Because the kevin delet eimoto dechadalayu nagu b'chol kelim shebabayit. The question of the nachri being present is just the opposite. When the nachri's there, the people do a more professional job. And they don't touch anything, they just go in and take out what they're supposed to take out. Because the overseer ensures that they act in a professional manner. On the other hand, when the Nachri is not there, then we suspect that everything they touched or everything in the house is Tamei because they don't act in a professional manner. They just go in, touch everything, and take what they want. So the Rabbeinu Chananel sees the presence of the Nachri as actually a benefit. Rashi says the presence of the Nachri is detrimental to the situation because he causes them to do a much more thorough job. On the other hand, the Rabbeinu Chananel says the presence of the Nachri makes them to be more professional because their supervisor is there, and therefore they don't touch anything. So that's how the Rabbeinu Chananel learns. Then, moving on to the story of the Ganavim. And it says, Uparayik Rab Pinchas b'Ganavim shebaud l'gnov v'asu tshuva v'lo ganvu klum. And they didn't take anything. V'amrinan, k'shem shelo ganvu v'lo nagu'u. Just like they did not steal, therefore they did not touch. V'ein tamei l'makom magar raglehem. Vadai. Only the place where they walked is definitely Tamei. Diev Shar Lavur Elim Kei Nagu. There's no way that they didn't touch something when they walked through. Mishum Shasu Tshuva. Because they did Tshuva. Ena Machzikim Otam B'Zeh Derech. Therefore, we don't say that they didn't walk there just because they did Tshuva. V'chei Nami Ganavim Hashnuim B'Mishnatenu. The Ganavim in our Mishnah Enam Ne'amanim. Elim Asa Tshuva. Only if they did Tshuva. Avim Lo Asu Tshuva. Ben elu abayit kulo tamei. Then the whole house is tamei. Techashinan dilma avre alayhu v'naguben. That they went through everything and touched him. Kedei leganvan. V'nitrudu olachu tovim mehem. They got caught up in their gneva, or they found better things to take. V'nichu, and then they left the other stuff behind. Elu shelo yikul amsan kulan kachat. Because they can't carry everything out. They have a limited amount of stuff they can take out. And therefore, they left behind the other kelim. So the way that the Rabbeinu Chananu learns is that both our Mishnah and the Mishnah in Tarot are talking about a case of Tshuva. The case in Tarot is a case where they decided they weren't going to take anything. They did Tshuva. They didn't steal anything. Then they believed that they didn't touch anything in there. But as far as where they walked, it has to be Tamei because they walked in there. We know they were present. They know where they're there. And we can't just say they're Ois Toma now. They were Tamei when they walked in. So the place where they walked are Tamei. None of the Kelim are Tameim because they did Tshuva and we assume they didn't touch anything. And our Mishnah as well. In the case where they did tshuva, we can assume, we can believe them with regards to the kelim that they did not touch. I mean, the kelim they took are gvili tamei, but the remaining kelim are tehorim. But in a case where they do not do tshuva, then everything is tamei. Kol habayit tamei, kulo tamei, like the braita that we brought from Tarot, by the gabayin, which is that everything inside is considered to be tamei. Because when there's no mitigating factor like a nachri overseer, or that they did tshuva, in that case, everything is considered to be tamei because we think that they rifled through all the materials to get what they wanted and then they left. Similar to the gabayim that have no overseer. So that's the way the Rabbeinu Chananu learns the Gemara. The way Rashi learns the Gemara is when there's a nachri there, the situation is worse because they're much more thorough in their search. According to Rashi, the difference between the Mishnah and Tarot and our Mishnah is with regards to tshuva. In our case, in the Mishnah here, the reason that they're believed about the kelim they took is because they did tshuva. Whereas the Mishnah and Tarot are not believed about where they walked and the kelim that they took because they didn't do tshuva. But whether the whole house is tamei, Rashi never addresses, and the assumption is that maybe it's not tamei over there. Whereas Rabbeinu Chananu learns that first of all, the nachri is a positive over here, the same way that tshuva is a positive. You have tshuva or you have a nachri here, those are mitigating factors. Those mitigating factors make us assume that only the items that they touched or where they walked are tamei. Everything else is considered to be tahor. In the absence of the nachri there, or the absence of tshuva, everything in the house is tamei because there's no mitigating factor. Okay, now the Gemara continues. Ubi Yushalayim ne'manim al kodesh. In Yushalayim, there be a leave with regards to the kodesh. Tana ne'manim al klicheres gasim l'kodesh. So over here, the Gemara reinterprets the mission not to be talking about amearetz in general, but talking about large earthenware utensils. V'kol kach lama. Why are they believed here? She'enosim kivshonot b'Yerushalayim. Because they don't make kivshonot in Yerushalayim. They don't make furnaces inside of Yerushalayim. That is because we don't want smoke. We don't want the heat, the smoke in Yerushalayim. Therefore, they asked making any kilns or furnaces inside of Yerushalayim. So there was no way to make licheris inside of Yerushalayim. Now Rashi brings two reasons why now we differentiate between licheris dakim and licheris gasim. According to our Mishnah now, with regards to Kli Cheres Gassim, these larger earthenware utensils, you're only Ne'aman inside of Yerushalayim. Whereas by the Kli Cheres Dakim, the smaller utensils, you're believed all the way out until the Modi'in. Why is there that distinction? Again, the way the Bava explains it now, there's a Chiddush in our Mishnah that when it says in Kodesh they're believed in Yerushalayim, this is not Stam Kodesh, like we mentioned in the previous Mishnah where they're believed inside of Yehuda. This is talking about a totally different issue of Kli Cheres. Now, there is a distinction in Kli Cheres. The larger Kli Cheres are only Ne'amanim inside of Yerushalayim. They're not Ne'amanim outside. Whereas by the Kli Cheres Adakim, they're believed all the way out till the 15 mil of Modi'im. What is the difference? So Rashi gives one of two reasons. One possibility, Rashi says, is that the Klei Dakim, everybody needs, because everybody has to bring their own personal Nesech or other items that they're going to bring up in Kodesh. Everybody needs, they needed a large number of these Dakim in order to present their Korbanot or to provide what they needed. On the other hand, the large utensils were only for the suppliers to the Mikdash, and therefore it sufficed for the suppliers of the Mikdash to have access to Kalim Gassim inside of Yerushalayim. If they were brought into Yerushalayim, they were considered Tahor for the suppliers. For people who needed for personal use, they needed all these items, then we said that they can have it all the way out to Modi'in because there are a larger number of individuals who need these personal utensils. The other reason Rashi brought is because with the guards too, the Kleilim HaGasim, they could be reused. Because even if they were supplied and used towards Kodesh, after they were given in, they could be reused again for Kodesh. On the other hand, with the smaller utensils, once you utilize them for korbanot, like cooking and eating your korbanot in them, then they had a termination date. They had to be broken afterwards because the korbanot, after their time elapsed, it's considered to be notar. And because of the notar and a kli cheres, you have to break the kli cheres. So they became, in a sense, their disposable kelim, like our plasticware of today, where the kli cheres, they were using them and then breaking them. So since they broke them, they always needed to replace them. So since there was a much larger demand for dakim, the Chachamim expanded the perimeter by which, when an Am Haaretz entered from the outside into that area, he was Neman, in order to be a larger supply of the smaller items. On the other hand, with the larger utensils, where there was a less of demand for it, they limited the perimeter in which the Am Haaretz were believed, is only once they entered into Yerushalayim, where they believed, with regards to these larger utensils, because that was sufficient for the suppliers, or for storing large quantities, and you didn't need a continuous supply of these smaller utensils. B'shat ha-regel ala afal ha-truma, at the time of the regel, they're even believed on truma inside of Yerushalayim. Minahani mile, why are they believed in Yerushalayim b'shat ha-regel? Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, damakra, the pasuk says, ve'yaseif kol ish Yisrael ala'ir ki'ish echad chavirim. Now this story is actually in a very negative story. It's about Pilegesh b'givah, when all Bnei Yisrael gathered together in order to fight against Binyamin. It says when they went to the Givah, when they went to that area to speak to Binyamin and to wage war against Binyamin, it says, V'yasev kol ish Yisrael alayir. They all came to the city, kish echad, as one person, chaverim. Now here it's a play on the word chaverim. Over there, chaverim means that they had a singular purpose. They were there together, and therefore they are considered like chaverim, which the Gemara here considers to be someone who is makpid on tuma v'tahara. But the idea being that when they're all together in the city together, they have a status of chaverim, then everybody is of the same nature, the same status. Hakatuv asan kulan chaverim. The pasuk made them all into chaverim. The Gemara in other places talks about that Yerushalayim is a ir shechubra la yachdav, that it's a city that is joined together, that everybody in the city is considered to be unity. The Maritz Chayut claims that that's exactly what drives this. It's the fact that everybody's there for the same purpose. That is what makes them or gives them the tahara, as long as we're all acting for the same reason, meaning that if they're coming to Yerushalayim on the regal, where everybody's purpose is to visit Hashem and to get closer to Hashem, that in itself is what gives them that special status. Others believe that because they're coming up to the regal to be mitahir for the regal, everybody is mitahir themselves for the regal, and because of that, they are considered to be tahor, quote-unquote, like Eimata Kodesh that's Aleihem, so to hear, Eimata Mikdash, when they're coming into Yerushalayim, that's the way that would be. Also, it's impractical for the Chaverim. The Chaverim are in Yerushalayim. If we made it to the Amei Aretz, we're all considered to be Tmeim, it would be impossible for them to be in Yerushalayim at the same time with so many people there and everybody interacting. There'd be no way that they could remain Tahor during the regal. So both for practical reasons, as well as we have Eimata Mikdash, as well as the Pasuk, all those together make us say that the Amei Aretz during the regal are considered to be Tahorim. So now in summary, as regards to an Am Haaretz, with regards to Kodesh, the Am Haaretz is believed because, number one, Eimat HaKodesh Alav, the fear of Kodesh is upon him, and therefore he's very careful to make sure or ensure that the item is kept a bit Tahara. Number two is, the Gemara says, if we don't do that, then we're going to have a situation when everybody goes and builds their own Bama and does their own thing. In order to keep an Achdut and a certain amount of unity in the Avodat Hashem, we made sure that everything with regards to Kodesh, everyone has the same status. Now, with regards to Truma, during Shat HaGitot and Shat HaBadim, the Am Haaretz is believed then, because we assume that he knows, since he has to give the Truma and the Matnot Kihuna, that he's going to do it B'Tahara, because he knows that, and he gets it ready, and everybody's doing it, he's going to do it B'Tahara, because that's a period of time where everybody's careful about these items. In addition to that, Rashi writes that the Kohanim would suffer a significant loss if we weren't considering the items of the Am Haaretz Tahor, because none of that stuff then would come to the Kohanim Chaverim, and they would not be able to collect the Truma and the Trumat Maser, because we'd assume that it is Tmeyah. With regards to utensils of Kodesh, if they are large utensils of Kodesh, we said since those are needed inside of Yerushalayim, there's a limited demand for them, but there is a demand, and there are no furnaces or kilns within Yerushalayim. Therefore, any item that's brought into Yerushalayim gains or garners that status of being tahor for the purposes of selling for Kodesh. Partly because Eimat HaKodesh Alav, partly because out of a necessity, because of the demand for those items. in addition, inside of the perimeter of Modi'im, meaning from 15 mil radius around Yerushalayim, even with the smaller utensils, the Amharitz is believed, once again, because partly Emata Kodesh Alav, and he knows that when he brings it in there, it's going to be used for Kodesh, so he is careful. In addition to the fact that we have a demand for it, there are no kelim made inside of Yerushalayim. There might be kelim outside, but we know that there's not sufficient supply, and we need the people to bring it in. And therefore, when they bring it in, they are ne'manim, in order to facilitate the ability to have this supply within the area. So that's, again, why over there we permit such items. The last item is Truma and Kodesh during the Regel. Why are Truma and Kodesh during the Regel considered to be Tohorim? There we had a number of reasons that were bought. Number one is because of necessity. Chaverim and Yerushalayim would not be able to survive if we made everything Tameh for the Amei Aretz. It just would not work. Number two is we have the Pasuk that said everybody is considered like Chaverim, or Chubra LaYachtav, Yerushalayim is a city that unifies, and therefore everybody is considered to be a Chaver inside of it because of that aspect of unity. The Maritz Chiyu takes it as far as to say that we have a singular purpose in being there. And as well as the fact that when the Amei Aretz are coming up to the regular, they're metairim themselves. They go to the mikveh to come up to the regular because everybody gets tahor to come up to the regular. And there is emata mikdash hakodesh aleihem, and therefore they are believed in those situations. So we have all these different classifications where the Amei Aretz are believed out of necessity as well as out of the circumstances that create it, that we think that the Amei Aretz is going to be more believable in these situations.
Poteach et chavito. Someone opens up a barrel of something during the regel, or he begins to sell his dough during the regel. Agava regel. He did it because there were buyers during the regel. So during the regel, everybody's considered to be tahor. So Amei Aretz touched it, Chavirim touched it. Rabbi Yehuda Meir, Yigmor. Rabbi Yehuda says he can finish it off after the regel. But Chamim Armim, Lo Yigmor. The Chamim say you cannot finish it after the regel. Now Rabbi Yehuda is brought in the Gemara in Beitza. This is one of the items where we say that they were gozer sofo mishum tchilato. We allow him to finish it so that he will open it up on the regel. The chaver is not going to open this item up on the regel if he knows that after the regel, it's going to be tamei and it's going to be problematic for him. So why do we let him finish after the regel? So that he'll open it up on the regel and not have a problem. The chachamim say, now either way, chachamim amir lo yigmar, he can't finish it up because the chachamim believe that he's going to open it up anyway. And you can't change something that once it becomes or touched by people that are tamei, you can't change the status of it to be tahor. During the regel, when the Amei Aretz are there, they all touched it. Yes, they're classified as tahor during the regel itself. But as soon as the regel's over, we go back retroactively and we say, look, they touched it. They clearly have a safek tumah. They have a safek tumah. We're going to classify it as being tameh. Now that it's tameh, you can't do anything with it. We can't automatically make it tahor. And I'm sorry, you did open up on the regel. You got the benefit of those buyers. But once the regel's over, you have to deal with it as being tameh. Rav Yehuda says, no, if he opened it up in the regel, then he gets the dispensation to finish it after the regel. Yotiv Rabbi Ami, Rabbi Yitzchak Nafka, Kilo de Rabbi Yitzchak Nafka. So Rabbi Ami and Rabbi Yitzchak Nafka were sitting on the porch of Rabbi Yitzchak Nafka. Potochad v'amar. Mashiu nechenu the regel acher. Can he leave it to the next regel? Similar question that the Gemara asked before. If we wait to the next regel, will it be tahor then? Amalei idach. Yadako mishamshim ba. V'atamar yinichenu the regel acher. Wait a minute. Everybody touched and you're telling me that you're going to leave it till the next regel? So he says, wait a minute. During the regel, it was tahor. After the regel, everybody agrees that it's tameh because the Amei Aretz touched it during the regel. So now what are you going to say? It was tahor during the regel, becomes tameh in between, and then becomes tahor again. How do you have something that's tameh automatically become tahor? It's one thing if you start the object, or you start the item during the regel, or during a period of time that it's tahor, then you can say that it maintains its tara. That's how Rashi explained the Mishnah before with regards to Kodesh, that the Amei Aretz was makdish, the item, during the Gitot and Badim when he's Ne'aman, and then he maintains it as Kodesh afterwards because of Eimata Kodesh. But if he waited till after the Gitot and the Badim, and then he was makdish it, it became Tameh already. He can't make it Tahor again. So Rashi says it had to happen during the Gitot and Badim. Tosafot said, well, maybe if he's Miyached it for Hekdesh, we can believe him. But everybody agrees that you have to maintain it from the beginning at a level of Tara. If it already became Tameh, who's going to let it become Tahor again? So the other person answered back, whether it's Rav Yitzchak Nafka or Rav Ami, depends who spoke first, they answer back and say, wait a minute, during the regel, they all touched it, and we still classified it as being tahor. I can compare the cases. That during the regel, the Torah is mitahir the Amar. It's not literally the Torah, it's out of a pasuk and novi, but basically the classification of the Amei Aretz is tahor. So therefore, from the beginning, it's tahor. Elahashto Tameyohi. Now, after the regal, it becomes Tamei, and you want to now make it Tahor again? Again, as long as it remains Tahor from the get-go, you're okay. And the Amaretz can continue to be believed. But once it falls into a status of Tumah, you can't then resurrect it as being Tahor later on. When it says, Neima Kitanae, let us say that this is a Machloket Tanaim as to whether you're allowed to leave it over to the next regal. The Tanei Chada Yenichenu. We have one Braita that says you can leave it over. The regal acher, v'tani idach lo yinechenu the regal acher. We have another bright that says you may not leave it over to the next regal. My love, tanaehi. This is the machloket tanaim, is whether to leaving it over to the next regal makes a difference. Lo, the Gemara says no. Hagdik tani yinechenu Rabbi Yehuda, v'tani tani lo yinechenu Rabbanan. It's the same machloket that we're seeing in our Mishnah between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim. This is not a new machloket tanaim in the position of the Chachamim as to whether you can leave it over or not. And the bright that says leave it over, that's Rabbi Yehuda. And the bride that says, don't leave it over, that's the Rabbanan. The Gemara says, V'tispra, does that make any sense? Ha, Rabbi Yehuda Yigmor Kamar. Rabbi Yehuda says, you don't have to wait till the next regal. He says, you can finish it off. Ela, ha, diktani lo yinichena, you don't leave it to the next regal, that's Rabbi Yehuda. And ha, diktani yinichena, the one that says, you can leave it over to the next regal, is the Rabbanan. Well, according to Rabbi Yehuda, what does it mean you can't leave it over to the next regal? You're allowed to finish it now. My lo yinichena, shein tzarich le'anichena. It doesn't mean you don't, or you may not leave it over. It means that you don't have to leave it over because you're allowed to finish it. But then we just took these brightot and said that they're the same machlok between the Rabbanan and Rabbi Yehuda as to whether you can finish or not. Doesn't give us an answer as about within the position of the Rabbanan, are you allowed to leave it over or not leave it over? So one brightot where you say you can leave it, that's the shita of the Rabbanan, that you can leave it over to the next regal. Rabbi Yehuda, who says that you can yigmor, says you don't have to leave it over to the next regal. But this is not a new machloket tanaim that defines for us or argues about whether you can leave it over or not leave it over to the regal. Based on this, it seems like you could leave it out to the next regal according to the Chachamim. Okay, now we move on to the Mikdash itself. Mishavara regal, mavirin al tarat azara. Once the regal passes, then they are mitaher the whole azara. Now, mavirin over here means either to go over, they go through the whole azara and they mitaher it, or mavirin is like vayaviru kol b'machaneh. They make an announcement for everybody to clear out the azara. According to Rashi and Tosfot over here, the problem is that the Kohanim Amaya Aretz that served during the regal, they touched items, and that's what we're worried about here. According to Rambam, it's even the Yisraelim that touched it. Even though we're talking about, we'll see in a second, the Mishnah, Kelim, that are inside the Kodesh. Nevertheless, they used to bring those Kelim out to show the people, and then some of the Amay Aretz might have touched them. So we have a problem here, which is that there's Tumah. Avara regal yom shishi. If the regal ended on Thursday, and there's only Friday left, lo yom ivrim ipnei kvod haShabbat. They didn't do this cleansing or mitayer, the Mikdash, until Sunday, because of Kavod haShabbat. As Rashi says over here, the Kohanim themselves have to get ready for Shabbat. If you make them take care of the Azara, they have no time to take care of their needs for Shabbat, and that would be inappropriate. Therefore, we wait until Motzei Shabbat for them to deal with Tarat HaMikdash. If the regal left on Wednesday, and they had Thursday and Friday, Shein HaKohanim Pnuyim, the Kohanim are not available. What did Rabbi Yehuda add? That Thursday and Friday are problematic. Well, okay, he has Friday for preparations. Why does he need Thursday? Could be that he believes that you need 2 days for preparations to the Shabbat. We see that by Tisha B'Av, that even when Tisha B'Av falls out on the Thursday, that they allowed on Tisha B'Av itself some preparations for the Shabbat in the Mishnayot. But what Rashi suggests over here is that there was another issue, which was the Mizbeach. The Mizbeach had tons of ashes piled up on it. Gemara tells us that during the regal, they used to leave all the ashes on the Tapuach, in that pile in the middle, to show how many Korbanot were brought, and how Chaviv B'nai Yisrael are to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So they used to leave that huge tapuach in the middle of the Mizbeach. Once the regal ended, they had to clear all those ashes out, and that took a tremendous undertaking. So the Kohanim are, first of all, busy with that, and then secondarily, they also have their preparations for Shabbat. So he says, since the Kohanim don't have time to deal with all of that, even when the regal goes out on Wednesday, they wait until Sunday, because Thursday and Friday is not sufficient for them to do all their preparations and be mitayer. The Kohanim obviously disagree and say that it's okay, they have enough time. If they have Thursday and Friday, there'll be sufficient time to do both of these items. Now, Kate said, Mavirin al Tarat Azara. What do they do to be Mitayer the Azara? So, Matbilim et HaKelim Shayub Migdash. They take all the Kelim and they put them into the Mikveh to be Mitayer them. Vomrim Lahem. And they say to the Amay Aretz, again, according to Rashi and Tosafot, this is the Kohanim, Amay Aretz, according to Rambam, it's even the Amay Aretz themselves. Shalot Tigu B'Shulchan. Don't touch the Shulchan. Because Shulchan, you cannot be Mitayer. And that is because by the Shulchan it says, Lechem HaPanim Tamid. That the Lechem HaPanim must be on there continuously. Since it has to be on there continuously, therefore, you can't remove it to put it into the mikveh. Since you can't remove it to put it in the mikveh, we don't want it to become tamei. Rashi asks, well, by the menorah, why don't we have an obligation like that? Doesn't it say tamid by the menorah? Rashi says the word tamid by a menorah is very different than the word tamid by the lechem apanim. And that is, the word tamid has two possible meanings. One meaning of tamid means continuous, always. The other meaning of the word tamid means it happens on a recurring basis. For instance, the korban tamid. The tamid shashacha, tamid shebein arbaim is not a continuous korban. It's a korban that occurs every single day. Therefore, it is tamid. Now, there's a tamid like the lechem apanim, which means that it must be on there permanently. It must be there continuously on the shulchan. The question is, the tamid by the menorah, which of those is it? Rashi says that the tamid by the menorah is a tamid that means that every day you must light the menorah, because the obligation to light menorah is only from night until the morning, mi'erev ad boker. So that's what the tamid is. Every day you must have the menorah lit from night until morning. During the day, there's no such obligation, and therefore, you could put the menorah in the mikveh during the day, and that's why the menorah is not bound by this. On the other hand, the Rambam believes that the menorah, the tamid by the menorah, means continuously. And therefore, the Rambam says when they were mendashing the menorah, when they cleared out the ashes from the menorah in the morning, they relit the menorah in the morning, because the Rambam believes that tamid means continuous, that you must have the menorah lit all times, both at night and during the day. Now, it happens if day at night you lit it and it continued through the day, that you don't have to relight it. But if it extinguished, then you would have to relight it. Tosafot does try to create some of a bridge between Rashi and the Rambam Shita, where he says it's true that they did clear out the Neirot in the morning, and if the Ner Maravi was not lit, they used to relight it. But he says there that the reason they relit it was so that they would have something to light from when it came to the afternoon. So he agrees somewhat with the Rambam. He says that during the years of the miracles, when the Ner Maravi stayed lit, it stayed lit all the way through, but it wasn't because there was an obligation necessarily to keep it lit during the day, but because they used that to light the other candles. And so too, when they cleared out in the morning and relit some of the candles, it was not so that it would be lit during the day, like the Rambam says, but rather it was a way to facilitate the ability to light from those candle or that candle in the afternoon period. Again, the Gemara is going to clear this up, but it's important because there's a question about the Girsa and the Mishnah, whether the Girsa and the Mishnah is only Shulchan, or the Girsa and the Mishnah is Shulchan and Menorah. From our Gemara, it sounds like that the only Girsa and the Mishnah is Shulchan. For the Rambam, it sounds like the Girsa and the Mishnah should be the Shulchan and the Menorah, because the Tamid applies to the Menorah as well for the Rambam. All the kelim in the Mikdash had backups, second and third backups. If any of them become tamei, they have backups that they can bring to replace them while they retire the first ones. All the kelim in the Mikdash require tvila to be retired them, except for the Mizbech Hazav and Mizbech Nechoshet. They have a din like the ground, and karka is not mekabel tuma, or something that's mechuber, the karka is not mekabel tuma. Divrei Rabbi Elazar. Chamim Ramim, b'nei she'en mitzupim. They say no, because they're plated, they don't require. What the chamim mean will be subject tomorrow's daf about exactly what this means, b'nei she'en mitzupim. Tana, we have another bright that says, Hizaru, shemetigu b'shulchan, ubi minorah. Be careful that you don't touch the shulchan and the minorah. B'tana didan, my time alotani minorah. Why does our Mishnah only mention Shulchan and not Menorah? So you see clearly from our Gemara that the Mishnah shouldn't have the word Menorah in here, but there is an alternative Braita that says that Menorah should be there. So the Gemara says, Shulchan k'tibe tamid. By the Shulchan, the word tamid is used, therefore it has to continuously have the lechem tamid lefanai. It has to be there always in front of me. Always means all the time. You can't take it off, so therefore you can't be mitaheret. Menorah lo k'tib ba tamid. Menorah, the word tamid, does not appear. Again, as we explained before, that's not so true. It does say the word tamid, but Rashi says the word tamid there has a different meaning. The word tamid there means not continuous, but rather on a recurring basis. Again, the Rambam learns differently. V'idach, and the other bright, why did he include the menorah if there's no tamid there? Since it says the menorah must be opposite the shulchan in the kodesh, it's as if it says tamid. Since the shulchan has to be there tamid, and the menorah is always opposite the shulchan, the menorah also has a din of tamid. V'idach, how l'gvola makomu ta'ato. That's not coming to tell you that it has to be there on a permanent basis. It's just telling you where is the placement. The shulchan's on the north. Opposite it on the south is the menorah. It's giving you placement. It's not telling you how much it has to be there or how often it has to be there. It's not about the tamid. Where it says, v'tibiklei d'kli'eitz asu d'nachatu. Why is the problem by the shulchan here, which we said before, that they have to tell him to be careful, don't touch it, don't make it tamei, because if it's mekabel tuma, we can't do anything about it, because it has to be lefanai tamid. It has to be there on a permanent basis. Since it has to be there on a permanent basis, then you can't be metaheret. Gemara says, wait a minute, why don't we go from a different approach here, that the shulchan is something that is a kli eitz asui l'nachat, and since a kli eitz asui l'nachat, it's not mekabel tuma at all. Which is that the fact that the shulchan is made out of atzei shittim, it's made out of wood, it is plated with gold, which the Gemara will deal with in a second about what impact that has in terms of the plating on it, but let's assume that it is a Kli Eitz right now because it's made of Atzei Shittim. In the Pasuk with regards to Tumah, Kli Eitz is compared to a Sak, and therefore we learn the Dinim from Sak. The Dinim of Sak are, number one, that it has to have a Toch. It has to have the receptacle in order to be Mekabel Tumah. Number two is that a Sak is Metaltel. You carry a Sak both Malay and Reikan, when it's empty and when it's full. So therefore, Kli Eitz has that same din, which is that a Kli Eitz has to be carried both when it's empty and when it's full. What we have over here is the Shulchan. Once it was put down, it was never moved. It was put in place, and then it never moved. Since it never moved, that's not something that is carried Malay and Reikan. It's never carried. Since it's Kli Eitz Asu in the Nacha to remain in place, it shouldn't be Mekabel Tumah. So why are we worried about the fact that you can't put it into the mikveh? Just say that it's not Mekabel Tumah. We don't have a problem here. So my time up, why is a Kli Eitz Asu in the Nachat lo mitameh? Why has it not become tameh? My time, I do me the sak beina. It has to be similar to a sak. Ma sak mitaltel malei reikam. Afko mitaltel malei reikam. So when it says, ha nami mitaltel malei reikam. The Shulchan is also carried when it's empty and it's full. Who? Kidir Eish Lakish. Like based on the statement of Eish Lakish. Damar Eish Lakish, my dichtiv, al Shulchan HaTohor. On the Shulchan HaTohor, Shulchan HaTohor implies miklal shu tameh. If the fact that it says it's tohor, that sounds like it could become tameh. Vamai. Why should it be able to become tameh? Kli Eitz Asu in the Nachatu. It's a Kli Eitz that's made to rest in place, and therefore it should not be Mekabel Tumah. Veinu Mekabel Tumah. Ela Melameh that they didn't leave it in place. Shema Magbin Oto. They used to pick it up. Umarin Bo Lole Regalim. When the Ole Regalim used to come, they used to take it out, the Lechem Apanim, and show them the Lechem Apanim. Vomrim Lehem. Ru'u Chi Batchem Lifnei Amakom. Look at your love before Kodesh Baruch Hu. Look at the Lechem Apanim. Siluko Kesidro. When you take it off the Shulchan, it's as fresh as the day it was put on. Dami Rabbi Shua ben Levi. Rabbi Shua ben Levi says, Neis Gadol Naseh B'Lechem Apanim. There was a tremendous miracle with the Lechem Apanim. Kisiduro Kach Siduko. The way it was put on is the same way that it was removed. Shenemar, because the Pasuk says in Shmuel Aleph, Lasum Lechem Chom B'Yom Hilakcho. That it was placed there, the Lechem Chom, the hot bread was there like the day it was taken. This is by David HaMelech when he's running away from Shaul. He has nothing to eat. And he goes to Novir HaKohanim, they offer him, they have nothing to give him except for the Lechem Apanim. Because of Sakanat Nefashot, they offer him Lechem Apanim to eat. But there, the Pasuk says, or testifies about the Lechem Apanim, that on the day that they took it, it was as hot as the day that they placed it there. And remember, the Lechem Apanim is baked on a Friday, placed there on Shabbat onto the Shulchan, and only taken off the following Shabbat. So that's 8-9 days later that it's taken off. If Rosh Hashanah is there, it can be up to 11 days there before when they bake it on Erev Rosh Hashanah, like this year. Where they baked it on Wednesday, they would have only taken it off the following Shabbat. That's a huge amount of time, and yet it's still as fresh as it was the day that was put on there. Tosafot over here says that it doesn't literally mean hot, because they baked it on Erev Shabbat. When they put it on Shabbat already, it was cool. Not that it was hot on the day they took it off, just like the hot on the day they put it on, because it wasn't hot on the day they put it on. But rather, this is a siman that was fresh. Just like on Shabbat, when they baked it on Friday, it was still fresh. When they took it off a week later, it was still fresh. So you see here, it's a tremendous miracle of the Lechem Apanim. So they wanted to show off that miracle to the people who came up, so they used to take out the Shulchan to show them the miracle. So you see, they did pick up the Shulchan. The fact that they picked up the Shulchan makes it that it's not a Kli Eitz Asu in the Nachat anymore. If it's not a Kli Eitz Asu in the Nachat, now it is Mekabel Tumah. So that's the answer why the Shulchan is problematic, because it is picked up. It's not Asu in the Nachat. It's not put in place permanently. It is picked up. Even when it's full, they carry it out to show everybody the Lechem Apanim. That's also why the Rambam says that the Shulchan can become Tameh not just from the Kohenei Am Haaretz, but even from the Amei Haaretz, because they took it out of the Kodesh to show the people and the Lechem Apanim, and it could have been touched by Amei Haaretz at that point in time. Tosafot does ask, what about in the Mishkan? In the Mishkan, when they were traveling in the Midbar, they used to pick up the Shulchan all the time to travel. So Tosafot over there says that that's not considered a Kli Eitz Shelo Asu in the Nachat, because when they picked it up in the Mishkan, it wasn't because they were picking it up because of the Shulchan itself. They were picking it up with all the other Kelim that were there. They were transporting the whole Mishkan. Since in the transport of the Mishkan, they picked everything up, this went along with it. When we say Kli Eitz Asu in the Nachat is the item is picked up itself. Not because of some other exogenous variable, it's because you pick up this item. That's why they needed Reish Lakish to come along and say that once you picked it up to show the people, that's not a Kli Eitz Asu in the Nachat. The first answer Tosfot says is, oh, once they reached Nov, Givon, Shiloh, Beit Olamim, they put the Shulchan there and they never moved it. So that, he says, oh, now it's Asu L'Nachat. He says, that doesn't matter, because if they originally carried it, it wouldn't be a din of Asu L'Nachat. So he says, no, the original carrying in the Midbar didn't count, because that was a practical need. It wasn't because they wanted to carry the Shulchan because of the Shulchan. But if you carry the Shulchan because of the Shulchan, like Reish Lakish, then it becomes a klish in Asu L'Nachat. So Gemara solved that problem. But then the Gemara says, wait a minute. Why don't you say typically mishum tzipui? Why don't you say that it is plated? That's not. When you have a plated item, that the item takes on the character traits of the plating. So why are you telling me here that the whole reason that it's not tahor is because you pick it up? It shouldn't be tahor because it's plated with gold. There's gold over the atzei shittim. That's not. We have a mishnah, shulchan v'adulpaki, a table, or a dulpaki, which is some sort of leather folding chair, shinifchatu, that were somehow diminished or ruined, o shichipan b'shayish, or you plated them or put on top of them some sort of marble, b'shir b'am makom anachat kosot, and you left in there a place to put down the cups, like something like the chairs today where they have a place to put your can of a drink inside there, they have a holder. So over here, they left a space where it still touched down to the wood, or touched down to the leather, where you could put your kos in it. Then, tameh, they remain tameh. Now, shayish is even, and kli avanim are tehorim. So even though you've been mitzaped, even though you covered it with a tzipoy, nevertheless remains tameh because of that opening. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, makom anachat achartichot. Not only you have to leave over a place for the cups, but also a place for the food, in order for it not to be considered a covering. But, if you close it up entirely, everybody would agree that it is tahor. So what you see here is that when the chipoy, the covering, has impact on what the kli is. If it was completely covered in stone, it would be a stone kli and tahor. So over here, where it's covered in metal, why doesn't it become a kli matechet, a metal kli? If it's a metal kli, then you don't need it to be moved around. Metal is not compared to a sack in the Torah. And therefore, metal is mekabel tumah even when it's flat. Doesn't have to have a receptacle. And number two is, it doesn't matter if it's movable or not, metal is mekabel tumah. So if that's the case, the problem with the shulchan should be that it's plated with gold, which is a metal, and therefore it should be mekabel tumah. What are you going to tell me that the atzei shittim are so chashuv, they're such special wood, that the metal is not mevatel them, meaning that the atzei shittim remain that it's atzei shittim, and therefore it's not considered to be a metal kli. That works according to Reish Lakish. Damar lo shanu el b'kli achs lagim. That's only true about wooden kelim. Now these are imported wood, ba'im b'midinat hayam, that comes from overseas, aval b'kli masmim. When it comes to this kli masmim made of wood, lo batle shapir. That works well. So Reish Lakish believes that there's certain woods that are not batel because they're so expensive or they're so important. So regular imported wood from overseas, that is batel degabe, the metal or the shayish over here. But with regards to masmim, which it's not clear what this wood is, either it's coral wood or it's some sort of black, dark, tropical wood. Again, wood that is extremely expensive. That wood is not batel the gabe, the metal plating, or the shayish, or the stone plating, because it's too important, and therefore you can't be mevatel it. So according to Reish Lakish, you could argue in the Mishkan, the reason the plating doesn't make a difference is because of the atzei shittim. El Rabbi Yochanan Damar, afilu b'kli masmim, nami batle. Rabbi Yochanan says, doesn't matter what type of wood you have there, it's always batel to the metal plating. Then what are you going to say over here? Atzei shittim, you have metal plating on top of it, it should be considered a metal kli, Mike in the Maimar. How are we going to explain, according to Rabbi Yochanan, why the problem isn't here, that this is a kli matechet? It's a kli matechet. That's why it's mekabel tumah. Nothing to do with them showing it to the olei regalim. Has to do with the fact that it's metal. It's a difference in the type of plating that you put on. Is it a plating that stands or a plating that doesn't stand? So, ha bai minei Reish Lakish mi Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Reish Lakish challenged or queried Rabbi Yochanan about this. Is it talking about a plating that stands or doesn't stand? If he's covering over the rim, or is he not covering over the rim with plating? Makes no difference. Makes no difference whether it's a tzipoy that stands or doesn't stand. Doesn't make a difference whether you cover the rim with the plating or not. In all these cases, it is batel to the metal, and the metal plating dictates, or the stone plating dictates. The plating is what dictates over here. So according to Rabbi Yochanan, we know that there is no distinctions made. If there are no distinctions made, it should be a metallic kli over here. If it's metallic kli, it's mekabel tumah because it's metallic. Nothing to do with the fact that you pick up the shulchan and it was a kli eitz that's moved around. You just say the problem is that it's mekabel tumah because it's a matechet, it's a kli matechet. Now what tzipoy omeid and eino omeid is, Rashi gives two explanations. One is that one is a very thick type of plating, and the plating would stand even without the wood on the inside. So by the stone plating, by the shayish is strong enough that even if you took the wood out, the shayish would stand on its own. That's called tzipoy omeid. The tzipoy sheino omeid is that here, the gold plating only stands because of the wood underneath. If you took out the wood, the whole thing would collapse because of the thinness of the gold. So therefore, tzipoy sheino omeid may be different. Maybe the thin plating of the gold is different than that plating of shayish. That's one possibility. The other possibility is how it's affixed. by the shayish, we assume that it's affixed in a very well-mannered way, that it stays on. Whereas over here, by the shulchan, Tosafot claims that the shulchan was similar to the aron, that had three pieces that were inserted into each other, and therefore, when you put the plating on top of it, it wasn't affixed so securely. So since it wasn't affixed so securely, it fell away or could fall away. That's called Sipui Sheinu Omeid. By the Shayish, we're talking about Sipui that's put on in a very, very good way, strong, fastened manner, and it won't come off. So that might be the difference. In the end, it makes no difference, because Rabbi Yochanan says that it doesn't matter what type of plating, the plating dictates. So according to Reish Lakish, you have an out here, because there's a possibility, if the wood is very chashuv, that the plating doesn't matter. The plating does not override that which is there. But according to Rabbi Yochanan, you have a problem, because he says the plating always overrides. And not only does the plating always override, but the plating, whether it's good plating, or it's only weak plating, or whether it's plating that stands on its own or doesn't stand on its own, no matter what, Rabbi Yochanan says that it's not patel, and you have a kli matechet here. So why are we suggesting that the whole problem with the shulchan becoming tamei is that it's a kli eitz that is moved around? The problem is that it's a metallic kli. So why are we talking about a kli eitz that is moved around and shown to the Olei Regalim? That's why it's mekabel tuma. It should be mekabel tuma, because it's plated with metal. So the Amara answers, no, Elishani Shulchan, the Rachmano Akarya Eitz. The Shulchan is different because the Torah called it wood. Dichtiv, because it says the Pasuk in Yechezkel, you may know this from the Mishnah in Avot, which is, HaMizbeach Eitz, Shlosh Amot Givoa, Farko Shtaim Amot. The Mizbeach made out of wood is 3 Amot high, 2 Amot long, Umikto Utav low, Verko Vikirutav Eitz, and the Mikto Utav, its corners are a part of it, and its length and its walls are all made out of wood. Then the pasuk says, "V'idaber alai zeh shulchan shelifnei Hashem." And then this table that was before Hashem spoke to me. Potach mizbeach v'seim b'shulchan. It opened up the pasuk talking about a mizbeach, and then it ends talking about a shulchan. So Rabbi Yochanan v'Reish Lakish d'amrei tarvayu. They both say, "Bizman shebeit mikdash kayam." When the mikdash is extant, mizbeach mechaper la'adam. The mizbeach is mechaper on the person. Achshav. Today, shulchano shel adam mechaper alav. The shulchan of a person, his table, replaces the mizbeach, and that is what is mechaper on him. All right, we'll come back to the Agadah in a second. Now, what you see from this pasuk is that even though the shulchan is plated with metal, nevertheless, the pasuk in Yechezkel calls it eitz. Since the pasuk in Yechezkel calls it eitz, therefore, it has a status of a kli eitz, even though it's plated with metal. In any other situation, it would be considered a metallic kli according to Rabbi Yochanan, but because the pasuk calls it eitz, you don't have a choice. It's a shulchan shel eitz. Now, when it's a Shulchan Shel Eitz, I have to work with the Dinei Tumav Eitz, and that is because it's a Kli Eitz Shasui Lenachat, that is made to move, because they show it off to the Olei Regalim. Since they show off to Olei Regalim, you have a problem that it could become Tamei. Since it can become a Kabbal Tumah, they say, be careful, don't touch the Shulchan, because it becomes Tamei, we're in trouble. We can't be Mitaherit, because you have the requirement of Lechem Panim Tamei, the Fanai, that the Lechem Panim has to be there all the time before Hashem. And therefore, you can't take the Lechem HaPanim off to put it into the mikveh, and that's why you're stuck over here. So we tell him, be careful, don't make the Shulchan Tamei. So that's the answer. Tosafot here deals with why the Mizbechot are not captured by this, because the word Mizbech is also used by Eitz. In the upcoming Gemara, the Gemara will in tomorrow's daf discuss the Mizbechot. Tosafot wants to know why they're not classified as Eitz. So Tosafot in the end suggests that the Mizbech here is not really talking about the Mizbech, but talking about the Shulchan that is near the Mizbech. That's the way Targum Yonatan says it. And therefore, it does not govern the din of the Mizbechot. Now, as far as the Gadita is concerned, over here, Rashi says the reason that a shulchan of a person is like the Mizbeach is because of the Hachnasa Dorchim that he does. He takes care of the Aniim on his table. The mitzvot that he does with his table have the ability to grant him the kapara. The mitzvot ben adam lechaveiro that a person does with their table, that is like the Mizbeach. And so too, the Mizbeach is mechaper, so too the table of a person today with those mitzvot is able to be mechaper for the individual. The Mishnah in Avot brings this down with regards to speaking Divrei Torah. Speaking Divrei Torah on the table, that Kri Kol HaShulchanot Maluki Vitzoa is talking about the Shulchan of a person, so too over there, we're talking about that the Shulchan that has Divrei Torah set on it, that's like the Mizbeach, the Shulchan where people eat and they don't say Divrei Torah on it, that's like a Shulchan Maluki Vitzoa. That's like a shulchan that's full of disgusting things, meaning that it's not the shulchan that is mechaper, it's not the shulchan, it's as if the shulchan doesn't contain that holiness that we would associate with the shulchan. What I would suggest over here is that the original intent of the Torah is clear that people, when they wanted to eat meat, had to bring a korban. They brought a korban shlamim, so part of the meat went to Hashem, and then the meat from the korban shlamim is what they ate. And that's what they practiced in the midbar. in the Mishkan, when you wanted to eat meat, according to at least one of the Deot and Tanaim, there was no Basar Tava in the Midbar. The only way you ate meat was that you brought a Korban. You brought a Korban and then you ate meat. The idea behind that is that we always associate our food and that which we eat as part of being like an extension of the Shulchan of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Part of it goes on the Mizbech, and then we eat the Shirayim from the Korban, and that elevates anything that we're eating we see as coming from Hashem. The problem is, and that's what the Torah addresses, that once we enter into the land of Israel, not everybody is proximate to the Mikdash. People are going to be too far away. That's exactly how the Torah terms Basar Tava, Bechir Yechak Mimcha Makom. When it's too far away for you to come to the Mikdash all the time, what are you going to do? So over there, we gave you the ability to shecht and take meat, but we gave it the trappings of Kodesh, Shechita, which is a din that comes out of Kodeshim. It's not mentioned anywhere else. Shechita is the method for killing Kodeshim. That is brought over here to Basar Taiva. And then you do Shechita also by Chulin meat. And again, you don't eat the blood, you don't eat the chalev, things that belong to the Mizbeach in Kodeshim. Over here, you're not allowed to eat them when it comes to Chulin. So what the Torah did was it made the Basar Chulin similar to the Basar Kodesh in some of its trappings to remind you of that fact. But the Ikar Din of eating meat is that you share a meal with the Kodesh Baruch Hu in a sense, that you understand that all your food and all that you provided comes from a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And that might be the connection over here. When the Mikdash is extant, the proper way to eat is to bring a Korban and then eat the Shirayim and share with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, understand that Kodesh Baruch Hu is providing your food. Today, the Shulchan, which is the major eating place of the individual, that place becomes like the Mizbeach, meaning that the Shulchan is a place where a person has to act like he would in his back. He has to recognize the Kodesh Baruch Hu. How does he recognize the Kodesh Baruch Hu on his Shulchan? He says, Divrei Torah to Shulchan. He invites Orchim to his Shulchan. He takes care of people who are less fortunate on his Shulchan. That's the way that he acknowledges that Kodesh Baruch Hu is the one who benefited him with what he has by acknowledging that by eating, not in a way where it's for himself and it's a Shulchan Malgei Ki Vitzoah because all he does is sit there to eat and fulfill himself, but he eats at his Shulchan and he uses that Shulchan to do mitzvot with it. And then it becomes like the Mizbeach that he's sharing the meal of a Kodesh Baruch Hu and acknowledging that a Kodesh Baruch Hu is the one who provided him all that he has. Okay, we'll end here by the two dots on the top of Chav Zayin Amud Aleph.